Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, family. As you probably all have heard, one of my favorite people in the world has transitioned today, Dr. Delbert Blair. And I just wanted to give a shout out to my big brother, one of my mentors, somebody that has meant a lot to me. And we will be talking about him next week. But right now, guys, enjoy this Best of the Dino Dean Show. We're going to be talking with the legendary Harlem Globetrotter, Marcus Haynes. Rest in power, big brother.
Fact, more than 30,000 students have gone to college using College Illinois prepaid tuition benefits. Lock in future tuition at today's plan rates so your child can join the growing number of College Illinois success stories. Enroll today at collegeillinois.org.
Blog Talk Radio.
The blackness. Keep it, keep on.
Also shoot me an email, and that email address is dinodeanshow@hotmail.com. We're going to have a Get It Off Your Chest Sunday like we always do, and this is the segment where we talk about any and everything, politics, what goes on in our communities, current events, you name it, we will definitely get it in. But right now at the top of the hour, fantastic gentleman, one of the legends of basketball, I would say today's game is based upon some of the things that some of his counterparts did back in the day in the 40s and 50s. Former, well, current, once a Globetrotter, always a Globetrotter, Mr. Marcus Haynes is with us. Welcome to the show, Mr. Haynes.
Thank you. Thank you. Looking forward to talking with you, too.
Oh, yes, sir. It's a pleasure to have you aboard today, and I want to thank you once again. And the first thing I want to ask you is this, Mr. Haynes. When did you first realize that you had a gift when it came to the game of basketball?
Well, I had a couple of brothers and a sister, and I kind of came up behind them, and I was playing basketball when I was about 8 or 9 years old in junior high school. And from junior high school on up to college, and up to after college, I played with the Harlem Globetrotters. I had a team called the Wrens. So I played basketball for a long time.
Yes, sir. And how did you become a member of the Globetrotters? How did that process take place?
Well, it's kind of odd. I went to college at Langston University, which is located in Oklahoma. And we played against the Harlem Globetrotters in Oklahoma City because the team that they were supposed to have played against couldn't make it. And they called my coach, and the coach said, you know, he would go ahead and play for it in order to keep everything going there in Oklahoma City because that was all. It was all the thing that would only team that would play against them. So we played against that team and we beat them. And it's just been a thing that's going over and over and over. In fact, when I was in college, I can't remember of any game that we lost in basketball.
Okay.
We played teams like Prairie View, Wiley, Texas College, and of course we played against the Harlem Globetrotters, as I might have mentioned, in Oklahoma City, and we beat them. And that's when they wanted me to come with them that night. They were going to sign me up for a contract that night. I was a senior in college, and if I were to leave and quit college, my mother would have found me and killed me. I wasn't quite ready to die.
Yeah, absolutely. The call-in number is 646-200-0067. And Mr. Haynes, in my opinion, the Harlem Globetrotters was the first dream team. Where did you guys travel to play basketball, and how were you guys received by fans as Globetrotters all over the world?
Well, you named the place, and we played there. And when we we had the touring team against us, and then sometimes we played a local all-star team. But every place we went to, we played, you know, they really welcomed us, and we would stay and play. And even though we might beat the team, pretty bad, well, we still got a good hand, so forth, so to speak.
Yes, sir. And I want to ask you this from a personal perspective. How did the players in the NBL and the BAA view the Globetrotters? And for those guys who don't know, the NBL and the BAA were the leagues before there was an NBA. How do those players view you guys?
Well, let's see. I don't think I understand it, but...
Did the players in the NBL and the BAA, did they view you guys as good basketball players, or did they look at you as sort of a sideshow?
Well, we weren't a sideshow. Of course, in a sense, we were a sideshow because this is what most people came out to watch when they said Harlem Globetrotters is in town. They're going to be here and mentioning it at the arena or a high school or a college. And it just all went real well. And then they started picking out places to play in. You know, just play. You name the place, the Harlem Globetrotters played this first time I was with them. You name any town or almost any country, and we played there.
Absolutely. And did the guys in the NBL and the BAA, did they respect you guys as ball players?
They respected us. And with the Globetrotters, well, we had a lot of respect from, you know. In fact, we played against the old team that's out of one of the top teams in the league, the Lakers. Yeah, the Lakers. We even played against them, and we did. You know, we just had a terrific team during the days I was with the Globetrotters.
Yes, sir.
And, whatever team came along, we played against them. We played against the Globetrotters the first time in Oklahoma City because the team there had been was supposed to have been playing against, couldn't make it. And my school, Langston University, and played against them. And that's when I was really introduced to the Harlem Globetrotters. We beat them.
Hello, Gino. How are you? This is Joan.
Hey, how are you doing, Joan? And for
I
you guys,
am
this is Marcus's wife. How's it going, Joan?
Everything's going well. Thank you very much. I'm sorry if I got in on it a little late, but keeping up with Marcus Haynes sometimes becomes a little bit of a chore.
She catches me, though.
I eventually catch up with him. But I did hear that last question. That was a real good question. You know, and if you don't mind, if I could kind of add to that, Marcus
Joan,
and I...
Joan, you can chime in anytime you get ready.
Thank you. We've been together for over 30 years, and so I have seen a lot, and I have learned a lot, and I've talked to living legends. I've talked to legends who are no longer with us. And the most interesting thing is that during the Frontier days, when basketball was being introduced here in America, it was not well received. And
mm-hmm.
so the Globetrotters was able to pull the crowds and pull the people and sell the tickets because of their comedy aspect to the sport. So they would pull in the people into the arenas, and they would play first. So the people would be in place, and then they would bring on the other Globetrotter teams. And really, because of the Globetrotters, the NBA integrated, and the NBA became the NBA. And you know the rest of that story.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask Mr. Haynes this question. Mr. Haynes,
okay.
Do you feel the style of ball that the Globetrotters played influenced the modern game today of basketball?
Definitely so. People came out to basketball games who had never been out to a basketball game when they heard about the Globetrotters and the kind of publicity and whatnot that the Globetrotters had and gave and, prior to going into that town. And you take the different shots, and, you know, it's just a great comedy act of something that people just had never seen before. Of course, it's been all over everywhere now, because they've traveled quite a bit, and they've traveled no matter how many ball games each year. And sometimes we play even triple headers.
Well, and you know, also, Dino, a lot of the things that you see the NBA ball players doing now, that came from the Globetrotters.
Right.
Yeah, Marcus has told me many a story where Goose Tatum, who was the team
showman
or comic, created a lot of those aspects of the game and brought it to the Globetrotters. And now you have the NBA ball players doing the hook shot. And what is that, where you get 3 points if you're behind a line or something, whatever that
right.
is? And then the other shot is half court.
Yeah.
Another shot is the shot that Marcus is famous for. He would jump up and throw it over his shoulder, and every time it would go in the basket. So now we have seen Michael Jordan take that to another level. Dr. J took it to another level. They're all taking it to another level, which is what they're supposed to do. But it all started with Marcus Haynes and his teammates with the original Globetrotters.
Absolutely. And what I find amazing is how when the NBA first started off, when it was a segregated league, the vanilla play that was in the NBA at the time, and the Globetrotters had such flair. And I watched the flair of the Globetrotters back in the day, and I can just see today's game being influenced so much, and that the Globetrotters being true pioneers of the modern-day game.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's really interesting. It's good that you're talking about this because people need to know the root of a thing. They need to understand where it came from, how it got started. They need to know that the first black NBA ball player was Sweetwater Clifton, who was inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame recently. See, these were the guys that took all of the crapola to get the players that are in place now where they are. And I just think that that's an incredible history.
And Bruce Sutter was a great attraction with the Harlem Globetrotters, in addition, of course, to the all the other players that played with the Globetrotters. And we played from time to time teams that just wanted to play against the Globetrotters. And, you know, they would book those games. And whoever they wanted to play against, well, you know, we played them. And nobody really could beat the Globetrotters. We played against some of the relief teams even years ago out of the professional league. And
yes, sir.
What's interesting, a lot of people think all of the games were staged. I think later on, maybe some of that did happen, but initially, when they had to prove their competency as well as their showmanship and being great entertainers, they had to play real basketball and be aggressive. And that's where they are today. That's where the NBA is today.
Absolutely. And Mr. Haynes, Abe Saperstein, he positioned himself to be the owner of the Globetrotters by the time that you joined the team. What was your relationship with Abe?
With Abe? Well, the relationship was good. You know, we had got a good understanding with each other. You see, we had played the when I was in college at Lincoln. When I was at Langston, we played against the Globetrotters and we beat them. Mm-hmm. And it's something that that just went right along with Abe Saperstein. He could hardly believe it when a college team beat his team, the Globetrotters. And Langston, where I said that went to college, where we played just about whatever team we played, we beat them.
Well, also, too, I think just to give a little insight on the Abe Saperstein situation, Abe Saperstein, and I'm going to quote Marcus, was not a person that told the truth, unfortunately. He was also a person that was very much, for lack of a better term, a dictator and wasn't fair with the ball players. And when he started making money, he withheld from the guys. The kind of contract that he liked to sign with the guys was a handshake and a verbal agreement that he always reneged on. And matter of fact, because of those actions, Marcus left the Globetrotters and started his own team. So,
which was the Harlem Magicians.
And so him and Abe, there were times of turmoil as well as happy times. But Marcus was his own man, and he stood on his integrity, and he determined what was going to be best for him and his family. And Abe didn't like that, and so Marcus, he went another direction, became his own businessman, had his own team, which was very successful.
Absolutely. And how did the other Globetrotters feel about Mr. Saperstein with these wink, nod, nod deals?
Well, I think from what Marcus has told me, Dino, that a lot of the guys, first of all, you must understand that black men had a hard time being able to be a part of the cultural and social aspects of our society. So getting a job was very impactful. And so whatever they could do to get a job, especially that was going to give them a little bit of dignity, they took it. But they didn't particularly care for him.
Well, what a lot of people don't know, I wouldn't say they don't recognize, but is the fact that there was another team called the New York Wrens, the Renaissance, and they played the same type of basketball. Only then that team was considered the top team, but once the Globetrotters started really playing everywhere, and the type of talents that the guys had, and then it just changed altogether. The Globetrotters team was a top team, so especially when it came to comedy.
And getting back to your question, a lot of the guys, they disagreed with Abe Saperstein. They argued, you know, going through the same things that normally one would do when you're trying to negotiate a contract. He would force them to sign contracts that they did not want to sign. Marcus told him he wasn't signing his contract and he was going to do what he wanted to do. Abe Saperstein, I know of in the 30 years that Marcus and I have been together, sued Mark Schlissel four times, and he's lost all four cases. So, but again, it's time and money. Abe Saperstein lost every case. He tried to sue Marcus against, and the federal judge told Abe Saperstein in the last case, don't come to this court anymore. Marcus Haynes has a right to exercise his skills and provide a living for his family.
Absolutely. And Mr. Haynes, what was it like once you started the Magicians? And who did you get to play on that team with you?
Well, Goose Tatum, for one, played with me. And they had a fellow named Josh Grider, who had played with the Globetrotters. And then I had some of my former friends in
college,
where I was in college, and they joined me. So I didn't have a problem picking up, ball players. And there was another team on the road, the New York Renaissance. And they had
And what type of record did the Magicians have? Were you as successful as a Magician as you were as a Globetrotter when it came to team success?
Whatever game we played, we won.
Okay, very good.
We played against a lot of pickup teams and going, filling our schedule out. And at the same time, just did a lot of we played a lot of ball games. There was days when we played three games in a day.
Did the Magicians ever play against the Globetrotters?
No, we didn't.
Good. And here's a question that I'm very interested in asking you, Mr. Haynes. What was the atmosphere like when you guys got to play the national champion Minneapolis Lakers?
Well, that was the game. We played against George Mackin and his group. Well, that was the game that everybody wanted to see. And it seemed that everybody from everywhere came in to watch that game. And especially in Chicago, because we beat the Lakers when they had George Mackin, Jim Pollard, all those guys. We beat them. We weren't afraid of any of the teams that we might play this against us, other than the team that traveled with us and played against us. But we would take them on, and we beat them.
Yes, sir. And how did it feel when you were inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame?
Well, I was honored. It was just a great thing. It was something that I hadn't even heard of the Hall of Fame, but so that came along and inducted me on the, on the first time around. I don't think they had to wait 2 or 3 years before they inducted me into the Hall of Fame.
No, that was unusual. They said that's the first time that's ever happened, that the first time that a nominee is brought to the board, that they're automatically accepted. And it was a year after Marcus retired. So, and he got inducted with Larry Bird. So it was a triple bang for him.
Absolutely, and I know it had to feel real good to know that his peers really appreciated and admired what he did on the basketball court.
Well, and not only that, he took a lot of them with him. When he got inducted, he had those guys, he invited them to be there, he had them on the stage, he took them with him because he said without the teamwork, there would be no team. And so I thought that was very honorable, not because he's my husband, but that's an honorable act.
Well, we kept the teamwork going.
Absolutely, and I'm very proud to hear that. And Mr. Haynes, I hear you've become quite the businessman in life after basketball. Tell us about some of your business ventures.
Well, I turn all that over to my wife.
Okay.
Whatever it might be, it could come to she's the top of it.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, Dino. Marcus when I first met him, he was in business, and the first thing out of his mouth was, he says, if we're going to date, you cannot have a job. I said, that doesn't make sense. I have to take care of myself. He says, you're going to have your own job. And he taught me business.
Wow.
And so from there, we've always been in business. He taught me how to operate and manage the magicians. Then we had a very successful industrial and commercial heating and air conditioning company. And he also had a very successful clothing line out of New York City called Biella. And he was written up in Forbes magazine as one of the most successful businessmen on 7th Avenue in New York City. You know, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere.
Absolutely.
So he was not just a basketball player. He was a businessman, a successful one, and an entrepreneur who just happened to be good at basketball.
Absolutely. And before I let you go, Mr. Haynes, I just have one last question for you. How do you feel about the state of the NBA today and the quality of play?
Repeat your question again, Dino.
I'm sorry about that. Mr. Haynes, how do you feel about the state of the NBA today and the quality of play?
Well, the quality is very good. You know, we've got the best players in the game today. And it's going to continue. They might have a few problems from time to time. You never know. But still, they've been able to not be wouldn't get themselves into a position that, you know, that players would strike or it's a team would strike. But it's just one of those things that it took care of itself.
Absolutely. And one more last question. What did you feel about the comments that came out from Donald Sterling, the soon-to-be former owner of the Clippers?
Well, I don't.
You want me to tell him what you said? Let me tell you what he said in a nice way. And it was interesting because coming from his era, it made a lot of sense. First of all, he wasn't surprised. Number one. Number two, he says that's been going on forever. He says, and number three, he said, but this idiot, quote unquote, just happened to get caught.
Right.
And he says, so he's got to pay. And he says, if he doesn't pay, the rest of the owners who probably do the same thing, it's going to hit their pocketbooks. It's going to mess up this business. He's got to go. So I thought that was an interesting viewpoint. I didn't think of it as something that always has gone on, but that makes sense. This is America.
It is America, and Donald Sterling may be the modern-day Abe Saperstein. Maybe I'm speaking out of line.
Very well put. Yeah, bravo. I like that. They kind of look alike.
Very good. But Mr. and Mrs. Haynes, I want to thank both of you for coming on air with me today. I really appreciate it, and I've been such a fan of the Globetrotters since I was a little boy. I remember when you guys would come to Chicago, my mom and dad would take me to the games, and it was just such a thrill. Even though I didn't get to see Mr. Haynes play when I was a little boy, but it was just a thrill to see the Globetrotters come into town and have all the children laughing, and it was a real good time, and I thank both of you for coming on the air today.
Yeah, well, it was always a good game, you know, especially, you know, what the Globetrotters proved that they were above and beyond such as being a comedy basketball team. You know, we played against a lot of the better teams. In fact, we played against the Lakers.
Yeah, he talked about that already.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm so glad that you had an opportunity to see the Globetrotters. They definitely were trailblazers. And please have us back again. We love talking to you.
Oh, without a doubt. Man, the pleasure is all mine, Joan. And you guys have a fantastic rest of your day. And I will have you back on air anytime you guys want to come aboard, okay?
Fantastic. Right. And tell your listeners that we said have a wonderful holiday weekend.
So we're still pushing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You guys have a good one, and thanks again.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That was the fantastic Mr. Marcus Haynes and his wife Joan Haynes, and I really am just beyond words almost to have a living legend on air with us today and somebody whom I didn't know all of the interworkings of the Globetrotters, but if you guys stay tuned and pay attention, on TV1 there is Hollywood Unsung, and you can see the story of the Globetrotters, and you will be able to see Mr. Marcus Haynes and some of the contributions that he made to the Globetrotters, and not just to the Globetrotters, but to basketball in general. And it's just phenomenal to have them on air. But I'm going to segue over to something else right now. And Terrell Owens, former wide receiver from the NFL. And this is very sad. He says he has no employable skills besides his athletic ability. And I find that very interesting in hearing that Mr. Haynes was such an entrepreneur. He wasn't just a basketball player. And I find it sad somebody like T.O. is out here, no money, and he himself says he has zero employable skills. And I'm sharing that with you guys to let you guys know education is so important for our young people. And those of you that have young people that have some type of athletic prowess, please don't ignore them when it comes to their schoolwork. Mentor them when it comes to their schoolwork, because only so many go pro, and well over 50% of those who go pro in a particular sport end up broke. And if you don't have the life skills to maintain yourself here in America, in the land of white supremacy, being a black athlete, man, it could be a sad thing. And I don't know if you guys how you guys view T.O. I thought he was a good wide receiver, but I find it sad that the brother finds himself in a position where he says out of his own mouth that he has no employable skills. So let's take care of our young people, and those of you that have those babies that can throw that ball, that can putt the golf ball and all of the above, make sure they keep their heads in their books. Make sure that they do the right thing academically, because you can only go so far in life athletically unless you're a Michael Jordan that has this super conglomerate behind him. Other than that, there may come the day where you got to go to work for real, come into the real world. But we're going to take a brief break, guys, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Leslie Jones of Saturday Night Live fame.
I'm Wayne Brady, and I've got something that will truly revolutionize your life. It's called exercise. It will get you from here to there, allow you to spend time with your family and meet new people. Oh, cut inches from your waistline, even help improve your self-image. So when you've got to choose between moving around or lying on the couch, choose exercise. Call the Will Rogers Institute today to learn more about this exciting new activity. Exercise is available in all 50 states and the District of Columbia and comes in 28 great flavors.
Hi, this is Dr. Del Blair talking to you from the Meta Center in Chicago, Illinois, where you can join us each Saturday from 2 o'clock to 3:30 for our teleconference. It's for you, it's for me. You can also reach us at www.themetacenter2.com. That's www.themetacenter2.com. Bonus at our business line, 708-422-6685. That's 708-422-6685, where you can buy diodes to protect you from radiation, bags to take away pain and speed up healing, and monatomic gold to help all of your cells operate better. And thank you very much. I look forward to hearing from you. And at this time of ascension, this is a time of prevention. May the Creator bless you now.
Welcome back to the Dino Dean Show. The call-in number is 646-200-0067. Once again, the call-in number is 646-200-0067. And a couple weeks back, Leslie Jones of Saturday Night Live fame, she did her infamous skit, and when I heard it, I was just like blown away that the sister would use such poor judgment in her comedy routines. And she was making mockery of slavery and how she would have had a very lively and vibrant love life had she been on a slave plantation. And I'm going to play that clip for you guys in case you guys have not heard it. Here we go.
The way we view black beauty has changed. Look at me. See, I'm single right now. But back in the slave days, I would have never been single. I'm 6 feet tall and I'm strong, Colin. Strong! I mean, look at me. I'm a mandingo.
Leslie, you're not saying you'd rather be a slave,
no,
right?
No, that is not what I'm saying. I do not want to be a slave. Hell, I don't like working for you white people right now. And y'all pay me. I'm just saying that back in the slave days, my love life would have been way better. Master would have hooked me up with the best brother on the plantation. And every 9 months, I'd be in the corner having a super baby. Every 9 months, I'd just be in the corner just popping them out. Just Shaq, Kobe, LeBron, Timbo Slice,
Sinbad.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I would be the number one slave draft pick.
Yeah, the sister, Leslie Jones, you guys heard the clip. She said she'd be the number one slave draft pick. And there was a lot of banter a few weeks about it, and I heard it, and I was off air at the time. And I'm glad to be back, guys. I'm real happy to be back. I missed everybody. And I was really itching to come on and speak about this particular subject matter because I heard some people pro Leslie Jones saying, you know, it's just comedy. And I heard other people take her to task. You know, hey, sis, you know, check. You need to check yourself. And I'm not going to jump all over this sister. I don't want to see her torn down. And the ironic thing is that our community complained that there weren't any black female comedians on the show. And through us and our voice collectively, she was put aboard the SNL cast. And she started off as a writer, and she this was her first time on air, if I'm not mistaken. And this is how she repays us. This is how she repays us with making mockery of what our ancestors went through. And this is nothing to jump all over the sister, even though she defended the skit. She defended it with all her might and all her soul, saying that, you know, we were sensitive. But I would venture to say that she would never have done something like this about the Jewish Holocaust. She would never have done something like that because she knows she would have been off the show in the blink of an eye. And not only that, we have to come to the realization and understand that somebody had to okay that skit. Even though she may have written it, somebody behind the scenes okayed her to come on air and make mockery of what our ancestors went through. And I'm saying all of that to say this. Let's make this a learning moment. Maybe she's ignorant to the fact of what actually happened with our ancestors. And just say hypothetically in the year 2014, this year, it comes across the news wires that a man and a woman were kidnapped and they were forced to have sex against their will and produce children for the economic benefit of the person that kidnapped them. We would say that's heinous, that person that did that actually be thrown up under the jail. We want to make light of things that happened to our ancestors. So we have to not have such a low level of being insulted. And I'm not going to say that I'm being too sensitive because I know I'm not. Because what she talked about was something called forced breeding. Forced breeding. And let me read something to you guys. Slave breeding in the United States were the practices of slave ownership that aimed to influence the reproduction of slaves in order to increase the wealth of slaveholders. Now, if somebody here did something like this to Miss Jones's mother, she would be having a fit, talking about how heinous it was. But since it happened to her mother's 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 mother, you know, she doesn't have a problem with that. And many of us in the community don't have a problem with that. Well, I do. I do have a problem with that. And I can never forget the atrocities that were dealt to our people. And I can never turn the blind eye to that. And I can't act as though it didn't happen, because nobody else acts as though their Holocaust didn't happen. And I want to make this a learning moment. I make this a learning moment. And I want to read something else to you as well. The purpose of slave breeding was to produce new slaves without incurring the cost of purchase. This was economics, guys. They treated us like horses, pigs, any type of livestock, to fill labor shortages caused by the termination of the Atlantic slave trade and to attempt to improve the health and productivity of slaves. Slave breeding was condoned in the South because slaves were considered to be subhuman chattel and were not entitled to the same rights accorded to free persons. See, this isn't something that you make mockery of, Ms. Jones. And the sad thing is, I saw some of her tweets, I read some of them, and she defended the position with such fervor. You know, sometimes step back, realize maybe you made a mistake. You know, we're all capable of making mistakes. Nobody's infallible. But if you make a mistake, man, just own up to it and say, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to step on any toes. I didn't know that. And there's nothing wrong with being ignorant, first of all. Nothing wrong with being ignorant. It's when you know something and still do it. That's when you're foul. Maybe she was ignorant to the fact of what slave breeding was. I don't know. But I want to make this a moment where we can go back down memory lane and see the atrocities that happened to our people because of slavery. And a lot of people want to say slavery was XYZ years ago. I'm looking at some deaf, dumb, and blind people every day that have, and it has to be the result of slavery. It has to be the result of low self-esteem. It has to be the result of being in bondage so many years and Jim Crow, so on and so forth. You have sisters right now still wearing the weave and don't see anything wrong with it. That's a slave mentality, whether you guys know it or not. That's a slave mentality. And to the sisters out there wearing the weave, don't get mad at me. I'm just telling you the way I see it. I don't see any white women out there wearing any Afro wigs. They're not trying to look like you when it comes to that hair. But you've been told so much and so often over the years that you were not worthy, you were not good enough. That's the product of slavery. And this is something we need to deal with as a community and not make mockery of it. And I think it's a shame that SNL, I'm not going to put it all on Leslie Jones, that Saturday Night Live would even air something like that. Like I stated previously, I guarantee you they would never, she would never have any jokes to say about the Jewish Holocaust. It would not happen. It would not go down. So if you're going to be that insensitive to us, maybe we shouldn't watch Saturday Night Live anymore. That shows you the respect that they have for us. But here's something else that I want to read to you guys. There was no such thing like rape of a slave woman by a white owner, because most slave women submitted to the advances of the white owners. One of the disturbing practices of the plantation was when some slave owners rented or borrowed men for stud services. This is the treatment, treating the men like horses, subjecting their female slaves to forced breeding or rape. The male slaves that were used were sometimes referred to as traveling niggers, stock men, and breeding niggers. Slave women were expected to produce as often as possible, and if they fail, they were usually sold off to another plantation. It's very disheartening that a black woman would make fun of rape, would make fun of her ancestors being raped. Because I don't care what anybody says, those forced breeding, the forced breeding that went on during slavery, it gets no more heinous than that. It gets no more degrading than that to have a woman and a man who may not even like each other forced into intercourse for the financial gain of the slave master. We can't make mockery of that. I won't allow anybody in my presence to make mockery of that. And like I said, I don't want to jump all over the sister, and I don't want to tear the sister down. But the sister needs to really check herself and realize the crowd that she's playing to. See, when I saw my man Dave Chappelle, I found it very, very interesting how one of the reasons he left the Dave Chappelle show is when he realized that they weren't laughing with him. They were laughing at him, and he recognized it. And the brother walked away from $50 million. Million-dollar contract he walked away from because he said, I'm not going to let these people, I'm not going to be the conduit that degrades our people. See, I hope Leslie Jones wisens up. And like I stated previously, the reason she's on the show is because of the collective of us complaining. Where are the sisters at on Saturday Night Live? And her first time on air, this is how she repays the community. Come on, sister. Wake up, smell the coffee, and recognize that you made a mistake. I'm not going to say you did it on purpose, but what I will say is those behind the scenes at Saturday Night Live, they know that was some BS that you did. You may have been so happy to be on air that you decided to let it ride. But trust me, they would never have let you make mockery of their plight. Never. And you know what? I'm taking a brief break, and we can talk a little bit about Columbus, too. And there's another angle that I want to go there as well. But you guys hang out with me for a little while longer. We're going to take a brief break. We will be right back. You're listening to the Dino Dean Show, Hollaback Radio.
So you can't save money? That's easy as pie. Sound bag and lunch instead of going out. $6 save times 5 days a week times 10 years is $21,000. That's a lot of lettuce. Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow. FeedThePig.org.
Hi, my name is Hydea. This commercial is informational for you and your future children.
Hi, my name is Amari. I will be speaking about safety of our people.
So many children are fearing gangs, and it is your job as students to say no to gangs and yes to a great future.
So many children in the world have died from gang violence. More than 500 children have died from being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
So think smart, but joining a gang isn't a part of it.
Here now by a guy named Molly Music. Man, this new R&B coming out is hot. And I think like for the past 5 to 6 years, there was a real lull in the music. And I'm a lover of music. And the past few weeks that I've been on air, I've been playing a little bit of the new stuff because I'm feeling it, guys. So those of you that stuck on the old school stations, venture out just a little bit. Some of this new stuff is good. But with that said, I want to talk a little bit about Mr. Christopher Columbus, because we're going to talk about slavery today, and we're not going to hide our heads in the sand when it comes to this subject matter. We're not going to do it today. We're going to talk about it and come to the realization that post-traumatic slavery disorder is alive and well, and Leslie Jones is a product of that, obviously, because she doesn't have enough sense to not degradate her ancestors. And I don't want to make this a moment to try to dump on the sister. I'm proud that the sister has a shot, but don't stab us in the back as soon as you get on air. My God. But right now I want to talk a little bit about Christopher Columbus. And before I talk about Christopher Columbus, I want to talk about Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler. And it is widely taught to people all over the world that Adolf Hitler is the most evil man in history. The most evil man in history. Now, that's a hell of a statement to say somebody is the most evil man in history. But why do they say he's the most evil man in history? Because Jewish blood was shed. Let's keep it real and let's keep it 100 today. Had Adolf Hitler killed 6 million Africans, he would not be viewed as the most evil man in history. And I'm saying that to say this. Let's read about some of the shit Christopher Columbus did. I'm going to read some things to you. This man was way more heinous than Adolf Hitler, in my opinion. One, because my people's blood was shed. So I place life on a high level when it comes to people that look like me. Secondly, he was so diabolical and low down and skunky. I mean, like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said years ago, wherever they go on the planet, they called him the skunk of the earth, the skunk of the planet earth, because even after they left, their stench stayed behind. That's a hell of a statement. Now, here's some stuff about Christopher Columbus. When he set foot on that sandy beach in the Bahamas on October 12, 1492, Columbus discovered that the islands were inhabited by friendly, peaceful people called the Lucayans, the Tianos, and the Arawaks. Writing in his diary, so this is coming from his diary, Columbus said that they were a handsome, smart, and kind people. He noted that the gentle Arawaks were remarkable for their hospitality. They offered to share with anyone, and when you asked for something, they never said no. He said the Arawaks had no weapons. Stop. I'm going to stop right there. I'm going to put it on pause. The Arawaks had no weapons. Don't be fools and don't have anybody telling you not to have a damn handgun, people. I'm not saying be aggressive with them. I'm just saying have them for your own protection. The Arawaks had no weapons. Their society had neither criminals, prisoners. Now, that's a fantastic society. That they were such a wonderful people. No jails, no prisoners, and no prisons. They were so kind-hearted that Columbus noted in his diary that on the day the Santa Maria was shipwrecked, the Arawaks labored for hours to save his crew and cargo. The native people were so honest that not one thing was missing. Now, that's a wonderful people. Now, that's hospitality. That's the type of people, man, if you run into some trouble, you want that type of spirit with you. Columbus was so impressed with the hard work of these gentle islanders that he immediately seized the land for Spain and enslaved them to work in his brutal gold mines. Within only 2 years, 125,000, half of the population of the original natives of the islands, were dead. Don't tell me about Adolf Hitler. Please, let's talk about Christopher Columbus, whom this country celebrates every damn year. He has a day. If I were a Native American, I would mark October 12, 1492 as Black Day on my calendar. Come on, guys. Let's stop having the enemy define who's a hero and who's an enemy. Now, I'm not saying Adolf Hitler was no hell of a guy, but don't try to say the man was the worst man in history just because Jewish blood was shed. Give me a break. Everybody need to step up to the plate and start representing their own. And you know, and this may sound kind of cold-hearted, but you won't catch me in the Holocaust Museum. And I don't want my children going to a Holocaust museum. Unless my children understand their own Holocaust, they don't need to understand nobody else's. You're going to learn your own Holocaust first before you start empathizing with others. Charity starts at home. But I'm going to keep going on talking about Columbus. Shockingly, Columbus supervised the selling of Native girls into sexual slavery. See, this sexual slavery thing started as soon as Columbus got here. See, this forced breeding, come on now, guys. We can't make fun of that, Miss Jones. We can't make mockery of something like that. I'm going to read and start over again. Shockingly, Columbus supervised the selling of Native girls into sexual slavery. Young girls the age of 9 to 10 were the most desired by his men. In 1500, Columbus casually wrote about this in his log. He said 100 castellanos are easily obtained for a woman as for a farm, and it is very general, and there are plenty of dealers who go out looking for girls. Those from 9 to 10 are now in demand. And we have a day for this guy? And then you have people in our own communities that want to make mockery of forced breeding, of sexual exploitation. And then you have the foolish of us in our communities trying to state it was no big deal. Leave Leslie alone. She's just being creative. Come on, guys. Let's up the bar for our own human dignity. Let's do that. Let's up the bar for human dignity of our own people. But yet you'll look at somebody else's plight and shed tears and then laugh at what your own ancestors went through. Something's wrong with this picture. And today we're going to straighten the picture out. We're going to straighten the picture out, guys, because there's no way that me, myself, as the man that I am today, can stand for such crap like that. And in many instances, I'm a sacrificial lamb on many levels, guys. Whether you know it or not, I'm a sacrificial lamb because I say the things I do. I say the things that a lot of people won't say. And I've not only talked the talk, I've walked the walk. I've been involved in grassroots organizations in the Chicagoland area that went out to try to help people, food giveaways, the Black Boy Scouts. There was an organization that I helped found called JUMP, Justice in Us Motivates People. It's now defunct. We were young guys at the time, and we let a lot of ignorance get in the way and a lot of ego at the time, but our hearts were in the right place. So I've been doing this for a long time. And when I see a sister go on television and degradate our people and then defend her ignorance, you know, we got to rein sister back in. That's all I'm saying. That I don't know the sister personally. She may be fantastic. And anytime I'm out of order, you know, rein me in. You know, I'm not one that think I'm above it all. I'm not one that's always right. You know, I'm wrong a lot. But one thing I notice is when you become a little more wiser, you start accepting your fault. You start accepting when you do wrong. You don't get defensive when you do wrong. You say, I'm sorry, and I'll be better, and I'll do better. And hopefully our girl Leslie Jones of Saturday Night Live will do better, because that skit she did, in my opinion, was atrocious and I would say borderline treasonous. It was treason for her to do that against her people. And in another place and time, you know, sister might have been dealt with in a real bad way. But I'm reading a little bit more about Columbus to the New World. Columbus brought cannons and attack dogs. If a native resisted slavery, he would cut off a nose or an ear. If slaves tried to escape, Columbus had them burned alive. Other times he sent attack dogs to hunt them down, that the dogs would tear off the arms and legs of the screaming natives while they were still alive. If the Spaniards ran short of meat to feed the dogs, Arawak babies were killed for dog food. But this man has a day. This man has a day where the nation stands in solitude, you know, thank God for Chris Columbus. And to me, any black person that would celebrate that day is pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. You know, no Jew is going to respect Hitler Day. It's not going to happen because they have enough self-respect about themselves not to do as much. And many of us celebrate the day in ignorance. This is why we're having this show today. And we're going to have to come to the realization. We're going to have to go back in time and really understand and see what slavery was. And I ask every one of us, there's a movie, an old school movie called Sankofa about slavery. Go see it. Go see it. There's another one called Goodbye. See, I always get the name mixed up. It's either Good Night, Uncle Tom, or Goodbye, Uncle Tom. Somebody in the chat room, help me out a little bit. It's either Good Night, Uncle Tom, or Goodbye, Uncle Tom. It was filmed in Haiti, I believe, back in 1971. It was banned in the U.S. because it didn't have that watered-down version of slavery. They gave it to us in the raw. And I believe our young people should see this. And I know there are a lot of us out there that say, you know, we're just putting that into our psyche. Goodbye, Uncle Tom. Thank you, Brother Anthony L. That we're putting into our psyche about slavery and its programming our young people. You know, and you could be right. 1971, yes, sir. And you could be right about that. But I believe our young people need to see who their enemy is. I believe our young people need to know what happened to them at the hands of the European. Therefore, maybe they won't look at each other with such a jaundiced eye and be ready to shoot and kill somebody over a goddamn gym shoe. You bumped into me over a color here in Chicago. You know, these guys wear their hats either to the right or the left. You know, I'll kill you if your hat is to the left in this section of the city. Come on. Our young people need to see who the enemy is, what the enemy looks like, so they can start loving one another. And maybe I'm incorrect in that assessment, but that's the way I feel. I believe that they should see these things. And I believe that it's our duty as the elders in our communities to show our young people and read things to them and let them know this is what happened to your people. It's nothing to be ashamed of, because you are such a kind, giving group of people. That's what we were. That's what we are. That somebody will come along and take advantage of you. And that doesn't speak badly on us. It speaks badly on the one that took advantage. It speaks badly on the European through his own personal greed and freakish nature, that he would take advantage of us. And many of us may not realize many of those natives here were us. They were us too. A little bit more about your boy Columbus. Columbus's acts of cruelty were so unspeakable and so legendary, even in his own day, the governor, Francisco de Bobadilla, arrested Columbus and his two brothers, slapped them into chains, and shipped them off to Spain to answer for their crimes against the Arawaks. But the king and queen of Spain, their treasury filling up with gold, pardoned Columbus and let him go free. He was so foul, they arrested him. They don't talk about that. They just say he's the man that discovered America. There were other Europeans here before he got here. Leif Erikson, the damn Viking, was here before him in this hemisphere. See, he is held on such a high pedestal because he gained riches for Spain/Europe. And he did it by any means necessary. He was a dog of a man, straight savage, but yet he has a day. Yet he has a day. This is the man that's kicked off the slavery for our people, and yet Leslie Jones of SNL wants to make mockery of it. We got to rein sister in and let her know, sis, you can't do that. You can't talk about your ancestors like that. And you have to come to the realization that, man, you know, you got some real people out here that's not going to stand for it either. A little bit more about your boy Columbus. One of Columbus's men, Bartolomé de Casas, I know I pronounced that incorrectly, was so mortified by Columbus's brutal atrocities against the native people that he quit working for Columbus and became a Catholic priest. He described how the Spaniards under Columbus's command cut off the legs of children who ran from them to test the sharpness of their blades. And you know what? I'm not going to even read anymore because it's starting to turn my stomach. But this man has a day. This man has a day. This Christopher Columbus obviously was some type of berserker, some type of sadist. And to be that cruel to some people, particularly when those people showed you nothing but kindness, to enslave them and kill off half the population and mistreat the babies and half the population killed and you maim thousands of others, cutting off legs and whatnot. But this man has a day. No, we can't stand for that. And back to Sister Leslie Jones. Sister, check yourself. Instead of being in this defensive mindset on you're going to come back harder next time, you know, go into a deep, dark corner of your mind and ask for forgiveness from your ancestors. Ask for forgiveness from your ancestors because what you did was pathetic. We're going to take a brief break, guys, and I want to share something else with you that I think is very important that the mainstream media is not talking about. We'll be right back.
Breastfeeding doesn't suck.
You'll feel way less crazy.
It makes you skinny. It burns 500 calories a day.
It helps you bond.
No periods.
It's free.
And it's so good for the baby's brain.
Less flu.
Less allergies.
It lessens the threat of childhood obesity.
It seriously reduces your chance of getting breast cancer.
It reduces the risk of childhood cancer.
It could save the U.S. billions of dollars a year in health care costs.
Whip them out.
Whip them out.
Whip them out.
Breastfeeding. It's what your tits are for.
Hi, this is Felicia Rashad with a message from Reading is Fundamental, the nation's largest and oldest children and families literacy organization. During the summer months, many children lose as much as 3 months of learning, but you can keep kids reading. Encourage them to read books about summer activities like camping and vacations. Show your kids the fun you have reading. Visit the library often. And start a book club for your children and their friends. For more tips and book lists, visit riff.org.
For tips to help children enjoy reading this summer, visit riff.org.
I come from Bed-Stuy. The niggas either do or they gon' die. Gotta keep the ratchet close by. Someone murdered. Nobody seen, nobody heard it. Just another funeral service. Niggas will get at you. Come through shining, they ask you. And broad daylight kidnap you. Let's get clapped through. Police stay on us like tattoos. Niggas only grind cause we have to. Money is power. Sling crack, weed and powder. Things come through every hour. So
welcome back to the Dino Dean Show. The call-in number is 646-200-0067. Once again, the call-in number is 646-200-0067. And right now, we're going to go to one of our signature segments that I like to do every week because I think is important. And on this date, May 25th, Thomas Green, Blind Tom Bethune, pianist and composer, was born a blind slave near Columbus, Georgia on this date in 1849. Bill Bojangles Robinson, dancer and entertainer who invented the stair tap dance, was born in Richmond, Virginia on this date in 1878. Madam C.J. Walker, the first black millionaire, died in Irvington on the Hudson, New York on this date in 1919. Her hot straightening comb, conditioning compounds, and other hair and skin products made her the wealthiest black woman in America. Yeah, y'all didn't like y'all hair back then either. Miles Davis, trumpeter extraordinaire, was born in Alton, Illinois on this date, 1926. Jesse Owens, winner of 4 Olympic gold medals in Berlin in 1936, broke 5 world records and tied a 6th in a 45-minute span while running in the Big Ten Championship track meet for Ohio State University on this date in 1935. Henry Osawa Tanner, world-renowned artist, died in Paris on this date in 1937. His painting, The Banjo Lesson, was selected for exhibit in 1894 at the Des Artistes Francois, I think I'm saying that right. Leslie Uggam, singer and actress who played Kizzy in Roots, was born in New York City on this date, 1943. And lastly, African Liberation Day is celebrated annually on this date. It began at an organization of African Unity Conference on this date, 1963. And these are today's Black History Facts. And I want to go on to a story that a lot of people may have heard about, a lot of people may not have heard about, but it really struck me really closely. And a lot of times, many of us in the conscious family here in the United States, Black Power family, love you guys to death. Sometimes we need to concentrate and look at some things going on outside of the country, because this, a lot of times, this is where retribution is going to come. And this story, who needs the United States, not Russia and China? Russia and China has just signed what is being called the gas deal, the gas deal of the century. And I want to share a little bit of this story with you, because this is a very, very important story. Russia and China have just signed what is being called the gas deal of the century, and the two countries are discussing moving away from the U.S. dollar and using their own currencies to trade with one another. This has huge implications for the future of the U.S. economy, but the mainstream media in the United States is being strangely quiet about all of this. For example, when CNN's website was searched about the gas deal between Russia and China, they did not find anything. But I did find links to top stories entitled "Celebs Who Went Far Red" and "Adorable Kid Tugs on Obama's Ear." Is it any wonder why the mainstream media is dying? Blase, Skippy, whatever. Guys, this is huge. This is huge, because right now the U.S. dollar is the standard all over the world. And when the day comes when a lot of countries will not accept the dollar, the demise of America is really going to be quick, fast, and in a hurry, in my humble opinion. And what Russia and China is doing right now, I want to go back a few years. The invasion of the country of Iraq and Saddam Hussein, and, you know, the U.S. and its allies in NATO, they always use the same playbook. He's killing his own people. He's killing his own people. We must go in and stop this. They don't give a damn about the Iraqi people. Saddam Hussein was about to take Iraqi oil off of the U.S. dollar standard and use euros. Can't have that. Hurts the U.S. economy. So that's why they went in and got Saddam Hussein. Whatever BS you're hearing elsewhere, don't believe it. This was a strictly an economic move. Muammar Gaddafi, he was about to start a currency in Africa that was going to be backed by Libyan gold, and it would be traded amongst the African nations. Same playbook. He's killing his own people. We must go in there and get him. It's all economics, guys. Whenever you hear this nation talk about a particular leader's killing his own people, you know it's some bullshit in the game. Let's just keep it 100. You know it's some BS in the game. And that country is making a power play for the U.S. dollar. Now, I said all of that to say this. We're not just going to go in and say Russian leader Vladimir Putin is killing his own people, because they got the stuff too. They have them bombs, and they have the same type of military might as the U.S. So we're not going to do that with them, nor are we going to do it to China. China's army is as big as the whole country of America. I believe America has between 250 million and 300 million people. That's the size of China's army. So we're not going to do it to them. So this could get very interesting. And this is a 30-year deal that Russia and China struck with one another. 30-year deal. And let me read a little bit more about it, because I started reading some stuff I didn't really care about. But here we go. Russia and China had been negotiating this natural gas deal for 10 years, and now it's finally done. Russia is the largest exporter of natural gas on the entire planet, and China is poised to become the world's largest economy in just a few years. This new $400 billion agreement that's damn near half a trillion, means that these two superpowers could potentially enjoy a mutually beneficial relationship for the next 30 years. So basically, they're cutting the U.S. out of the game. Say no more U.S. dollar here. We're going to trade with our own currency. And that's huge, guys. That's huge. We go into smaller countries and assassinate their leaders for this. And they do this for a reason. Doesn't hurt the U.S. economy. And there's a little-known fact that once the U.S. dollar is no longer the standard for oil all across the world, that by law, this nation can no longer print money to cover its debt. See, that's the only thing keeping a whole damn country afloat is the power of that dollar. And you have the two other superpowers saying, hey, power play time, we're cutting the U.S. out. And I'm saying all of this to say this, when it happens, black family, will we be prepared? Will we be prepared when the day comes when the United States is no longer a superpower? Because remember this, you may have heard it here first. If you haven't heard it anywhere else, you're going to hear it now. History will bear witness to what I'm about to say right now. No superpower has ever stayed on top forever. It just is not going to happen. Those of you who think that the United States is going to be the big bad dog forever, it's not going to happen. History will bear witness to what I'm saying. The day will come when the U.S. falls, and what are we going to do collectively as a group of melanated people when it happens? No, I'm so silent because I don't know either. I really don't. But we need to come up with a plan. And a lot of these so-called think tanks and these operation pushes and these national action networks, we better get on that. We better get on that because I'm telling you, when it happens, it's going to be nasty. It's going to be real nasty. And you think these militia men going to stay in the woods when that happens? They coming out the woods, and they're going to be urban terrorists on this soil. Let mayhem happen here. You're going to have so-called patriots coming out of the woods, the forests, doing the damn thing. And our leaders are telling us don't have any firearms, turn them into the police department. We better wake up and smell the coffee, because if this day ever comes, and it's going to come, no superpowers ever stayed on top forever. And this power play that Russia and China did, they're starting. They're starting right now. The games have officially begun. They have officially begun. And mind you, I don't want to see the U.S. economy go to shit. But at the same token, there's a little dark part of me that says, let her die. Let her fall. Let her fall. Let's start over and let's recoup. And who's going to be in position to take over the nation? See, karma's something else. We may not be in a position right now to do anything for revenge or, wrong wording, to do anything to exact some type of justice for all that this nation has done to us. But it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Karma's something else. I'm in love with karma. Karma is so beautiful. And when karma kicks in on this nation, it's going to be nasty. And I'm not one talking about doom and gloom. I'm just talking about the natural cycle of nations. And the natural cycle of nations is one day top dog will fall. It's going to happen. And can we position ourselves to be the new rulers of this land? And it can happen. And it can happen if we prepare now. And one of the things we're going to have to do, in my humble estimation, and I've said this in the past, stop depending on the grocery store for your food. Just stop. Because the day could easily come when a loaf of bread is $25. $25? God damn. Oh, yeah. $25 for a loaf of bread. And what I'm saying is not unprecedented. It's happened in other nations. within the last 50 years when their economies imploded. Don't think it can't happen here. So don't have feeding your family totally dependent on a fiat dollar. And the ironic thing is I was off air for a couple of weeks chasing the fiat dollar. Isn't that something else? But when it all comes down to it, let's get our hands back into the soil and learn how to grow some food. Let's learn how to fish. Many of us think that's hickish. You know, that's for them hicks. No, that's what you do to sustain yourself. Planet and the earth that we live on is a beautiful planet. We just got idiots running it. The planet has enough to sustain everybody. But you have a greedy 1% that wants it all for themselves and want to sell you air, sell you water. Isn't that something else, guys? We have to pay for water, a basic necessity of life. And there's such an abundance of water on the whole planet for everybody to use, but somebody monetized water. That's the type of wicked world that we live in today. It's a wicked world. And to keep it 100 with you guys, I can't wait for it to fall. Because it may not happen in within the next 10, 20, 30 years, but maybe when I'm in my 80s, I could just be sitting back, an old man, just laughing. I knew it was going to go down. Because I'm tired of watching our people being second-class citizens. And I'm tired of people taking black life for granted. I'm tired of people acting as though we should just be happy to be at the table. You know, be glad we let you in, nigga. Now shut up and just collect your money and don't do nothing for your people. I'm tired of that. I'm tired of people taking us for granted. I'm tired of us taking ourselves for granted. I'm tired of white superiority and I'm tired of black inferiority, the complexes. I'm tired of it all. I guess I'm just tired. And I shared this story with you about Russia and China because something's going to happen very soon. And I hope it's not war. I'm going to make the assumption that this nation wouldn't have the balls to go to war with Russia or China because I don't think that we'd win that war. And I don't mean we, them. Won't win that war. It's not going to go down. China's army is too big. And Russia got the same nuclear capability as we do. And I will hope this berserker is not that berserk to hold damn planet over money. I hope there's some type of rationale still left in that savage of a mind that he has. I'm going to read a little bit more about this. President Vladimir Putin is turning to China to bolster Russia's economy as relations sour with the U.S. and European Union because of the crisis in Ukraine. Today's accord, signed after more than a decade of talks, will allow state-run gas producer OAA Gazprom to invest $55 billion developing giant gas fields in eastern Siberia, including the pipeline, Putin said. It's an apocryphal event, Putin said, in Shanghai after the contract was signed. Both countries were satisfied with the price, he said. Watch what's going on and really pay attention to this one, guys. And it may seem something so abstract and so far away, but in my humble opinion, it can have definite and will have definite repercussions on this nation. And like I stated, we may have been so disorganized and scared to death or whatever to exact justice against this nation. But justice will come one way or another, whether we're the ones doing it or whether we're going to be the ones being the benefactors of it. So let's position ourselves. And as I talked about Terrell Owens earlier, this brother says he has no employable skills beside his athletic ability. We better have our babies prepared for this one, too. We need our children to be intelligent. We need our children to be in position. We need our children to be ready because when chaos hits the U.S., there's going to be opportunity for certain people. It's going to be an opportunity for certain people because one person's calamity will be another person's opportunity. It happens every day. So let us be the ones that participate and be in prime position to be movers and shakers in this country. And another thing I want to share with you before I go off air, I want us to start to get international as well. There's so much business in the motherland. And we have people all over the world going to Africa, enjoying the spoils, but very few of us. I think there are roughly 4,000 African Americans over in Ghana right now. And it's going to be hard work to go over there and start a business and to get into entrepreneurship. But it's something that can be done. Sometimes we have to look outside of the borders of this nation. This is a huge world, guys. I don't consider myself an American. I consider myself an earthling. The world is mine. So let's start looking outside of the borders of the United States and decide we're going to do something big outside of the borders, because it's there. And I want to share a quick story with you guys. There was a gentleman. There is a gentleman that I know. He started an import-export business out of Ghana, and he was bringing into the nation pineapples to the Chicagoland area, pineapples right out of Ghana. And these particular pineapples, they were shorter and fatter than the Hawaiian ones, but the core of them, you could eat the whole thing. There wasn't that hard fibrous core in the middle, and they were selling like crazy, but somehow the deal fell apart. But I shared that story with you guys to let you see there's opportunity over there. And I was so proud when my brother was bringing those pineapples over here. Peach Produce here in Chicago. I would go over there and buy those pineapples all the time. And when I was in the produce section, and I'd tell people, don't get them. Get those, he called them the sugar loaf. Get the sugar loaves. Fuck Dole. We're not buying Dole today. We're buying the sugar loaves, those from the motherland. So opportunity is abound. And when I brought Brother Sims on, LaMonica Sims, a few weeks back from Atlanta, you know, we talked about entrepreneurship, import-export, because we need to sustain ourselves and be in a position to do something big for our families and for our communities. Because like I stated earlier, I'm tired of this bottom-of-the-barrel syndrome that we have. I'm tired of people looking down upon us, and I'm tired of those in the motherland even looking down upon us. I'm tired of it. Everybody look at African Americans as though we're no good, when all the world takes our trends. Now I'm being real selective about our collective. I'm talking about black people here on these shores. We set the trends. The world looks at us. And the day that the black man and black woman in this nation rises up, it's a wrap. It's a wrap. Supremacy will die. And with that said, I'm going to end this show today because my other guests couldn't make it today. And I'd like to thank everybody that was in the chat room today. And once again, I miss all of you guys so much. I was off the air for a couple of weeks chasing that fiat dollar. But I'll be back next week, and I want to thank all of the listeners that are listening in via telephone. And special shout-out to our brother, Mr. Marcus Haynes of the Harlem Globetrotters, as well as his wife, Joan. They did a phenomenal job. I just love speaking with that living legend. But with that said, I'm going to bring this show to an end today by roughly a half hour. And there's a particular song that I chose to take this show out, because we've been talking about justice for our people and karma. And believe you me, I don't believe that the universe would have our people all over the world, melanated, go through what we've gone through at the hand of an oppressor, of a vicious oppressor at that, and karma not kick in. So who's taking us out today? Mr. James Brown. JB is with us. The Big Payback. I'll talk to you guys next week. Get back. Payback.
Don't hide.